Howdy, folks. Today, I got my brother Brandon with me. We're going to be talking about some things he's been thinking about and wants to talk about. He wants to title this You Versus You, as we're going to think about the influences of the world and ultimately, you know, what the response of somebody who wants to please God is. Of course, as always, whenever we're talking about the scriptures, we want to examine ourselves. 2 Corinthians 13:5 says, examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith, prove your own selves. Know you not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ be in you, except you be reprobates. We want to test ourselves. We want to prove our own work, as Galatians 6:4 says. So without any more from me here, I know Brandon's got a lot to talk about. So I'm going to go ahead and kick it over to you, bro.
Yeah, bro. I wanted to discuss the power of influence and just the mindset that we as Christians need toward those influence, you know, because we're in this world where we have so much access and information to so much in this life. And, you know, from podcasts to, you know, we're doing a podcast now, but, you know, podcasts, news, social media, you know, different apps, you know, just endless amounts of information at our fingertips. And so if you don't want to go to the grocery store or even cook, you know, there's an app for that. You don't even have to go leave your house to see a doctor. There's telehealth. You know, you got questions, ask Siri. So access and information in itself is not a bad thing. But with all that access and everything that we're exposed to, how vulnerable does that leave us to influence? Because we know that everything online is not good or beneficial. So when we talk about influence, you know, thinking about how marketing and advertising work, companies put so much in our faces to get us to buy certain products. And so you can be at home watching television and you see a food commercial. And then that food commercial, you see a burger that looks pretty good. You know, that can get you to think like, man, that looks pretty good. I want one of those. You know, that advertising works. It's influence. You know, along the lines of influence, I can remember back in the early 90s, my aunt and uncle had, they lived in Dallas, and then they moved to a suburb outside of Dallas and to this nice big house. You know, it was awesome. It was great. We used to go over there for holidays and things of that nature, special occasions, because they had a house large enough to accommodate the whole family. But as I got older, seeing this nice big house, you know, what kind of house do you think I wanted? You know, being exposed to that. So in order for me to get a house like that, I know I needed to have money. And so in order to have money, I needed a good paying job. So that kind of molded my mindset towards career, you know, as I got older. So in that environment, seeing those really nice cars and really nice houses and people with designer clothes and things of that nature was just pretty much normal to me. You know, I remember back in, when I was about 10, 11 or 12 or whatever, when Deion Sanders played for the Dallas Cowboys, and I can remember seeing him ride around town in his Dodge Viper. I don't know if you remember a Dodge Viper. Imagine. It's a, it's a souped up sports car, going to Michael Irvin's barbershop. He had a barbershop back in the day, and seeing his, Mercedes parked out front with the license plate with his nickname said Playmaker. You know, all this stuff was normal to me. I say that to say this, that sometimes when we're exposed to a lot of different things, we might not even realize that we're being influenced. And it wasn't until I really started to figure it out and look at it that didn't even realize that that stuff was influencing me as I got older. And at that time, and as I got older as well. But I will say this, just kind of clarify, I'm not saying that having a big house or having a nice car is sinful. However, my point is just the mindset of why you want that house or what led you to that decision. So this is kind of what I want to talk about influence today. And so if you have anything you want to kind of add on to that.
Yeah, I like where you're going with your thoughts. You know, talking about Dallas Cowboy football players is always fun, right? So, yeah, some people out there listening to the podcast might be like, who are really, I think probably most people know who Deion Sanders
right,
is.
Right, yeah.
Now, for sure. Maybe more because of the whole Colorado football thing than not. But yeah, sure. I like where you're going with that. Throw a little scripture in there. Brandon brought up that it's not necessarily sinful to be rich. You know, 1 Timothy 6:17-19 says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Let they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. It's like the things we're talking about. There's always a balance. That, you know,
right.
Information is not sinful. It's what you do with it. Money is not sinful. It's
right.
What you do with it. Some people say, wait a minute, you know, money is the root of all evil. No, it's the love of money in the context of 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 10, if you just back up from what I just gave you. So, yeah,
right.
Lot to think about. Go ahead, bro. Keep going.
Yes. So when it comes to that mindset, you know, we talk about influence. And then, like I said, we're talking about that mindset towards those influences. So when it comes to mindset, for those of us that have played sports, you know, we're very competitive. You know, we want to win. But as Christians, regardless of our athletic background, the concept of competition is still something we should grasp because it's something that's taught throughout the scriptures. Luke chapter 13, 23 and 24 says, then said unto him, Lord, are there few that be saved? And he said unto them, strive to enter into the strait gate, for many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able. 1 Timothy 6, verse 12 says, fight the good fight of faith, lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. And so that word strive and that word fight is what I want to bring out. That strong number 75 means to struggle, literally to compete for a prize, figuratively to contend with an adversary, or generally to endeavor to accomplish something, fight. So that principle of competition and that competition, that principle of fighting for something is something we should all understand because we're fighting for something. We're fighting for that reward, right? We also should have that concept and understanding of what free will is. So with that free will, we make decisions every single day. And so with those decisions, we're cautioned not to enter into temptation. Why is that? Because the spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak, Matthew 26, 41. So after being exposed to all that this world has to offer, you know, what will you choose? Can you push yourself to remain strong even though there's an easy way out in front of you? This is where that mindset of competition comes into play. Again, the title of the podcast or the lesson is You Versus You, like competing with yourself, taking it as a personal challenge, not to give into that temptation and keeping yourself pure. An exercise of challenging yourself will be something as simple as telling yourself that you're going to do something daily or every other day or however long you're going to do with it. And actually sticking with it, building up that mental toughness and continuing on even when you don't feel like it, to kind of build that discipline. Discipline yourself in carnal things can translate into the spiritual as well. We can learn a lot from those Christians that were addressed in the book of Hebrews, not to follow their example of lack of growth, Hebrews 5, 12 through 14. We ought to constantly be growing and maturing in the faith where we think, what we can consider and think about the end, being able to count the costs. Luke 14, 25 through 33. A good example of this is Joseph and Potiphar's wife. You know, in Genesis 39, you know, being an example of not taking the easy way out, right? Genesis 39, 7 through 12 says, and it came to pass after these things that the master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his wife, his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he had into my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, very persistent, that he hearkened unto her to lie by her. I'm sorry, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. You know, Joseph could have easily fallen into this temptation. You know, Potiphar's wife was very, very persistent, as we see, begging almost essentially for him to lie with her. But he wasn't going to fall into that trap. We ought to be able to go down this road of thought and growth as we grow as Christians to say, yes, I could do this, whatever this decision may be, I can commit this simple act. But first and foremost, thinking about the end, what is it going to do to my relationship with God, first and foremost, but also with my brethren, that relationship with these people that I love, that love and care for me and are looking out for my soul? You know, how devastated would they be in the repercussions of my sinful decisions or my selfish decisions?
You know, the world would say, yeah, but Joseph, happy wife, happy life. He could have laid with Potiphar's wife, kept it under the blanket, so to speak, and maybe got a better position in Potiphar's house. He even got more than he already had, because the world would say adultery's not that bad, right? And Joseph could say, I'm in this situation because of the evil my brothers did to me. Joseph could say, where is God right now? Why am I going through all these things? People tend to defeat themselves mentally, right? Mm-hmm. And when you think about how you're approaching what you're talking about, it's like an internal war. Right. And you know, generally we talk about the external. We're fighting against the world, but sometimes you're your own worst enemy. Paul said to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 10, 3-5, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty to God through the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Is how am I going to win this? I'm going to have to control my thinking. I'm not going to allow the world to control my thinking. I'm not going to allow, you know, this woman that wants me to do these sinful things to control my thinking. I'm going to stay focused and think about, you know, the repercussions, like you brought up, with me and God, with my brother and myself. And, you know, as a Christian trying to be a light to the world, well, what are you doing when you go out and you tint that light and you darken it? You know, you're not shining anymore. You're just showing them hypocrisy. And then that's a bad reflection on our Lord.
Yeah. Can literally consider in everything, you know, growing that, not just that one act, but just considering all of it, you know, being all encompassing, not just focusing on that one act and thinking that I did it, and so it's not going to affect anybody else but me. Okay, I'm done. No, you got to consider everything. Because, you know, we're talking about influence and we're talking about how powerful influence is. And we know as adults, we know, you know, if you, we know that understand we know and understand the power of influence, right? And so that's why most parents, when they don't have their children listen to certain things or watch certain things, because those parents understand those children being exposed to things, what that could do to those children. So same as for us as adults, you know, we just can't limit our thinking to children. Like we mentioned earlier, you know, something as innocent as that food commercial on TV, you know, that's still influence. You know, that can influence us to try to purchase whatever food item that is. We always have to remember how God looks at this world. You know, first and foremost, that it's wicked, right? 1 John 5:19 says, and we know that we are of God and the whole world lieth in wickedness. And secondly, that there are only two classes of people. You're either light or you're darkness, sin, saint or sinner, children of God or children of the devil. So we always have to remember that we live in this evil world and we're subjected to so much evil, some of us more than others because of our jobs. But, you know, of course, we know we can't escape the world, like you mentioned earlier, because, you know, how else will be a light? You know, Philippians 2:15. But this is why we're taught to be sober. Being sober is being about being always on guard and being aware, understanding and realizing, you know, what we're up against. 1 Peter 4:7 says, but unto the end of all things, but the end of all things is at hand. Be therefore sober and watch unto prayer. And so we know that influence is not something that's new. You know, there's nothing new about influence. Ecclesiastes 1:9 says no new thing under the sun. But from the beginnings, influence has affected man. Back in the book of Genesis, chapter 3:1-6, Eve literally being deceived by Satan or that serpent, says, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea have God said, ye shall not eat of the evil tree of the garden. And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the tree of this fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God had said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die, for God doth not know that in the day that ye eat thereof, that your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eye, and the tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit thereof and did eat. And she gave unto her husband with her, and he did eat. You know, we talk about bad influence, right? I do have to clarify, because I know we have listeners that may not understand this principle, but at one point in time, Satan literally roamed the earth, right? Job chapter 1, 6 and 7 says, Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves to God before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then Satan answered to the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and walking up and down it. And so this is no longer the case, because we know Satan and his angels are now bound. 2 Peter 2 and verse 4 says, for if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and delivered them unto the chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. Same could be echoed in Jude verse 6. But now what we do, or what you do, or what I do, make it known to whom we belong, either a child of God or a child of the devil. 1 John 3, 8 through 10. So I got a question just real quick. I'm not sure, you know, when bad things happen, you know, I've heard people in the past, well, that's Satan, or that's the devil. You know, the only question I would have for them is, like, is that Satan literally doing it? If so, you know, what does that look like? Have you ever heard anybody say that, or give you an answer, or what that looks like?
Nobody's ever given a good answer. One time was talking with a person, and they decided to move to a place, and first, they said God was wanting them to move to this place. So God, every time he turned around, he would see like a sign on the side of the road that said this certain place, or he would be searching online and be this certain place. And then once he got there, he said Satan started to work. Satan wanted him to do this or this. So for him, it was God worked through TV commercials and billboards, and Satan did the same thing. It was like they, yeah. And you know, I just asked him, I said, so, you know, let's say this billboard, that was one of the things he kept bringing up. You know, you see them on the side of the road, and they're signs, and they are really signs. I said, so if you called the company that owns that billboard, who do you think paid to have that? What do you think they sent the bill to hell Satan. for Satan to pay the bill? But yeah, that was his mindset.
Interesting. I was curious. I've heard that many times, where someone is tempted or commits a sin, or whatever that case may be, or if something, like I said, something bad happens. Oh, that's Satan. That's the devil. Like, do you literally mean that's Satan, or? Well, what is that? What does that look like to you? Can you explain that? I've never had anybody explain, so it doesn't sound like you have either.
Well, the lady that I was telling you about not too long ago from El Paso, she hears voices and things in her house, you know, and whispers, and she thinks that's Satan. And, you know, of course, take her to the scriptures and show when Satan was directly involved with something, it wasn't voices and whispers.
You know, I have to address that side thought. I was just curious if you ever heard that. But anyway, we'll get back to our point. back to our point about power of influence. God knows and understands the power of influence. So when he sent his people to possess a land, they were told to destroy all in that land. Let's figure out and find out why that happened. Deuteronomy chapter 7, 1 through 5. It says, when the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou shalt go to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they, verse 4 says, for they will turn away thy son from following me, and they will serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. But thus shall ye deal with them, and ye shall destroy their altars and break down their images and cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire. So we understand and have that concept of understanding of the power influence. And God has given was giving them an understanding about what's going to happen if you allow this to keep going. If you don't destroy, utterly destroy everything in that land, they're going to take your heart away from you. And so we know God is a jealous God. Deuteronomy chapter 6, 14 to 15, and other chapters as well. Similar point is, why do we get rid of leaven? You know, 1 Corinthians 5, 6 and Galatians 5, 9 is a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. And I know a lot of people may be familiar with this verse. 1 Corinthians 15, 33 says, be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. I always heard this about the youth, you know, the youth ministers used to always bring this up at the congregation in era I was in. Yeah, youth, you need to, when that little young lady or that young man's trying to get you to do something, you know, you got to make sure that you're not a part of that. And it was always about youth, not about adults. It was always focused towards youth for whatever reason. but yeah, we can't allow that carnal thinking to gain the advantage over our spiritual based upon that influence, because we know what's within would eventually come out. Mark 7, 20 through 23. And we know that you're known by your fruits. You know, Luke 6, 43 through 45. If you have anything to say about that.
Well, you know, the people you're around are definitely going to rub off on you. People tend to think the other way around. You know, I'm a Christian. Right. I'm going to rub off more on them. And I mean, you're going to potentially rub off on them. That would be the goal. But, you know, the right. scriptures give us some pretty strong warnings. Proverbs 13, 20, he that walketh with wise men shall be, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Proverbs 1:10, my son, if sinners can entice thee, consent thou not. Solomon had miraculous wisdom, wisdom directly given to him from God. And in 1 Kings 11 and 4, it came to pass when Solomon's old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect. The Lord is God, as the heart of David, his father. The power of outside external influences, yeah, it's destructive. But then you got to turn around. You got to say, people can only influence me so far as I allow them.
Wow, exactly.
And you know, that's where we got to take heed to ourselves. That's a scriptural point, you know, throughout both the Old and the New Testament, to take heed to thyself. In Deuteronomy 4 and verse 9, take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thou hast seen, lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life, but teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons. And that's repeated throughout the law of Moses in Joshua 23, 11. Take good heed, therefore, unto yourselves that you love the Lord your God. When Jesus is talking, Luke 21, 34, take heed to yourselves, as any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, that day come upon you unaware. Paul to Timothy in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 16, take heed to thyself unto the doctrine, continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt save thyself and them that hear thee. Take heed to yourself. The world's going to influence you, but that's not going to be an excuse.
Right.
You know, you give in, and you do what you know you should not be doing, that's not going to be the excuse. Like any good parent with a child, Johnny told me to do it is not going to be the excuse. Like if you're arrested for a crime, you know, well, my friends were doing it, so I was going to do it too. And it's like, yeah, even if they were the main culprits involved, you're still going to be charged as an accomplice to a crime. So the world's going to influence. But then you got to step back and you got to say, hey, I'm the one making the decision to follow that influence.
Right.
And then you got to act on that. So you go ahead with your thoughts.
Yeah. Just kind of piggybacking on your point you just made is that, you know, we can, those influences are going to be there. But of course, you know, it's going to be different for us all. You know, what we're tempted by and, you know, where we are in the faith and things of that nature. So it's going to be different for everyone. You like you said, you have to evaluate yourself to make sure that you don't put yourself in a compromising position to actually be influenced to sin, because everybody's going to be different. One temptation for one person may not be for another. So again, like you say, you have to know yourself. You have to understand what you're capable of and where you are and what you need to steer clear from. That kind of is like a segue into our following statements or following points, kind of like the countermeasures. First and foremost, we're gonna have to kind of counter these temptations or influences that we may incur in this life. Spiritual thinking is gonna be first and foremost. In this world we live in, everything we see, everything, everything is tangible. You can touch things. So being exposed to everything that's physical, how much more difficult would it be to remain spiritually in thought? Especially as Christians, when we have the authority to enjoy carnal things. For example, there's nothing spiritual about food. We can enjoy food, that big string TV you have, or the marriage bed. There's nothing spiritual about it. It's all carnal. Like a verse you brought up earlier, we know that we can enjoy things, 1 Timothy 6:17. But that should tell us that spiritual thinking, it takes work. It's not just, I'm going to read this verse and then I got it. It's continuous. It's a daily thing that you have to kind of make sure that you put in place in yourself. Romans chapter 13:13-14 says, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, and not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and even envying, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provisions for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Similar sentiment in Ephesians 4:22, but about the renewing of the mind. It's going to take work. It's not just a one-time thing. Like I said earlier, it's going to be a continuous thing. It's not just, like I said, reading a verse and then just being exposed to everything, and that verse is going to counteract everything that you're exposed to. It's not how it works. It takes effort on our parts. We also have Jesus as our example. He was tempted in all like as we are, but yet without sin. Hebrews 4:15. He's also our example. 1 Peter 2:21-23 says, for even hereto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. He committed himself to him that judges righteously. And this is in the context about being persecuted for righteousness' sake, and not retaliating, and facing the persecution that he was facing for the congregation, or for the people that were being persecuted here in 1 Peter. Also, we have brethren. Brethren, we're supposed to be the opposite of what their fathers did in the wilderness in the book of Hebrews, like we brought up earlier. Hebrews 3:13-14 says, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning, our confidence steadfast into the end. And so we understand and know that, it's so beneficial and necessary to be a member of a sound congregation. Hebrews 10:24-25, that exhorting one another, that pushing one another to continue there. And like I said, we're exposed to so much. So these like-minded people that you're around can aid in your journey in this life, as we go through this life and deal with certain things and that this life may bring. Any thoughts?
I want to come back to a little bit what you were saying about Ephesians 4:22 and the internal change, because you versus you is really, you have these external sources that are influencing you, but it comes to the internal. Like when you say you versus you, I think of Galatians 5:16-17. This I say, walk in the spirit, and you'll not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. These are contrary the one to the other, so that you cannot do the things you do. Or 1 Peter 2:11, dearly beloved, I beseech you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against your soul. Bring up Solomon, for example. I read how his wives took away his heart when he was old in age, but prior to that, David told him, his father David told him in 1 Chronicles 28:9, thou Solomon, my son, Know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart and a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understandeth all the imaginations of the thoughts. If thou seek him, he'll be found of thee. But if thou forsake him, he'll cast thee off forever. Hey, Solomon, if you had just kept your heart right, then your wife's influence wouldn't have worked. You would have had the defense already inside. And look, here's knowledge, here's wisdom, here's understanding, knowledge, all of those things that Solomon possessed, but those things aren't sure defenses if you haven't secured yourself from within. Then those outside influences come, and it doesn't matter how much you know, how many scriptures I can throw at somebody. It's those influences are going to win when I haven't made up my mind, when I haven't fully decided. You know, that song that we sing, I have decided to follow Jesus, no turning back. That needs to be our mantra, right?
Right. For sure. Yeah. You have to definitely make the decision because if not, you're going to find yourself being tossed to and fro. You can find yourself wavering, being like the parable of the sower, falling by the wayside. If you don't have that good and honest heart, if you haven't made that decision, you definitely could waver whenever something may happen. You can be strong for a good while or whatnot, and then, but you haven't, if you haven't made up that mind, you definitely could waver. And then kind of going back to our point about basically encouraging yourself and making sure that you're mentally ready to for the fight, girding up the loins of your mind, 1 Peter 1:13, because it says, wherefore gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you into the revelation of Jesus Christ. But again, this is based on these people that were facing persecution. But if we think about it, when you're facing persecution and the things that they were facing, how easy would it to be to just to kind of lose hope and lose sight of the things that you were going through and just kind of fall by and then just fall back into what you were doing? So these people were definitely encouraged to gird up those loins and be sober and make sure that you're mentally prepared for this battle. I know we talked about it before. We talk about it quite often about how soft this generation we are, as because we don't have to face anything. We've talked about it before, but it's just such a true thing. I mean, just think about how your mindset, if it's not you versus you, and then something happens and you're not mentally prepared for that, will you stand or will you waver? We have to make your mind up and make sure that you are correcting your thinking. Again, 2 Corinthians 10:5, you brought it up earlier about bringing every thought into captivity, because if you don't, you're just going to be by the wayside again. You're not going to be able to make those right decisions in those moments where you face persecution, where you face these temptations in the world. It's just going to be a lot of turbulence that you're going to go through mentally and may end up falling.
Yeah, one of the things that evangelists have to focus on if we're faithful to the Lord is what Paul wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangle himself with the affairs of his life, that he might please him who had chosen him to be a soldier. That mental preparation to be ready to endure hardship, to endure things that come about. Yeah, we're sitting here in air-conditioned homes, and we're in triple digits out here in El Paso, but air-conditioned homes, and we're not sitting out in the sun trying to figure out how to find shade in the middle of the desert. We're complaining about the prices of things, but we're still eating. We're drinking clean water. All those different types of things, but having the mental preparation, the right mindset that's going to be there, and that's huge. Getting ready for what might come instead of allowing the world to just keep our guard down.
Yeah, exactly. That mental toughness that we're talking about. I'm just when I think about that, I think about all the things that our brethren went through in the first century and just in general. It's both terrible and it's encouraging at the same time. And what I mean by terrible, of course, because the horrible things that they had to go through and endured. But it's encouraging for us to know that we're not going through not near the things that they went through, and some still remain faithful. When you think about that, and the persecution and the beatings and the being put to death, Stephen being stoned, them setting up for false witnesses and then him being stoned. It's like, and then even in the first, in the infancy, when these Jews came to Jerusalem for Pentecost and then they heard the gospel and stayed, and then they left everything wherever they were. For wherever they were from, they left everything. They didn't go back to grab anything. They just left and stayed in Jerusalem. I think about the mental fortitude and the mental toughness that they had. I mean, you got to think, like, they didn't have provisions for anything. And that's when, of course, other brethren stepped in. They brought it, to the apostles and things of that nature to divide amongst all the people. But just think about not the uncertainty, but not wavering or not giving it a second thought. Just think about the uncertainty of staying where you were and not going. What if you have a thriving business, that you were very wealthy and things of that nature? You left all of that behind to stay and please God and to serve God. Like, just think about that mental toughness and how easy it would have been for some of them to go back to certain aspects of the law. Like, we know that they wanted to go back to. We see in Galatians 4, 9 through 11, they had to be taught over and over and over again not to go back. But now, say Galatians 4, 9 through 11 says, but now after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage? You observe days and months and times and years. I'm afraid of you, lest I bestowed upon you labor in vain. You think about these Christians here, and a lot of their brethren that wanted to go back to the law and not necessarily keep the whole law, but just based on traditions of what they were doing. But just see, keep it certain aspects of those law and how easy it would have been for everyone to just go back to that law as well. Because, like, this is what we know. This is what, for generations, this is what we've been taught. So I want to do the same thing. That just those influences of those people that wanted to go back and keep certain aspects, how easy it would have been for others to fall into it. And we know that some did, but that's why they had to constantly be reminded. Galatians 5, 1 through 4, stand fast, therefore, that the liberty with wherewith Christ had made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Behold, I, Paul, say unto you that if ye be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. For I testify again to every man that is circumcised that he is the debtor to do the whole law. Christ is become of none effect, of no effect. Wherefore, wheresoever of you are justified by the law, you're falling from grace. So they had to make sure that they weren't going to be falling from grace by trying to keep that whole law. And just think about the mental toughness that it had to take to keep that. They could have taken the easy way out. Well, in theory, they could have taken the easy way out because the law was bondage. But they, like I said, they were doing it more about traditions and things of that nature. But this is the mental toughness that they took to keep and stay the course as opposed to giving in. It's like that internal war. They had to make that decision what they were going to do.
Yeah, a lot of us think from the standpoint of turning back. We think of applications that would apply to most who would listen to this podcast. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10, Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world, and is departed into Thessalonica. And he goes on about others who went other places. But we think about falling away as returning back to the world. Well, you're bringing up the Jews, going back to the way of the law of Moses. That was their world. That was their economy. It wasn't just their spiritual guidance. I mean, you think about John 12, 42 and 43, nevertheless, among the chief rulers, many believed on him, believing on Jesus. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. It's like you're going to lose everybody, you're going to lose everything to have. And you see here, they believed in Christ. I mean, it wasn't disingenuine. They believed he was who he was, pistuo. They had that faith, but they didn't have the mental preparation to put God above leaving their place among men. So for the Jews, going back to the law of Moses was going back to what they were accustomed to. Like a lot of people, when they're in Christ and then they go back to the world, they're going back to what they're accustomed to. They're going back to what appealed to the flesh. And a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times, it's because that mental preparation hasn't been completed.
Great, great point. Going back to the world, that's a great point. Because the call of the world is always more of this, more of that, but to what end? When are you going to be satisfied? And the answer is you're not. Proverbs 27:20 says, hell and destruction are never full, so the eyes of man are never satisfied. So the call of the world is, if you have a house, want a bigger house, bigger and better. You got a car, want a bigger house, a bigger car, a better one, a newer one. You know what I mean? Like, to what end? If this world continues to stand, that these years are going to continue to pass. And if you get this new car that's in 2024, you're going to have to get a new car in 2025, and it's going to continue. It's the same course. But to what end? Like, where does that contentment come into play? And that's going to be a huge issue as well. Like I said, when you see online and you see all these things that people are displaying, and their vacations and their new cars and their new houses, and what could happen to us even unknowingly looking at that all the time? We can be influenced by that and start thinking, well, that is nice. I've been working hard. I can get one of those. I mean, again, it's nothing wrong necessarily about getting something because you work hard for your money, you can enjoy it. However, again, just the mindset of being influenced as to why do you want that? If you're going to get it, fine, cool, good for you, whatever. But why do you want that? Why do you feel like you have to have something when you didn't have to have it last week? Why is it something that you got to get now after you've seen X amount of people with that same thing, or some people having a set leveling up on their houses, or whatever the case may be? Just being aware of what influence is, man, because we can't get caught up into the world's agendas and their messaging, because it's all over the place, man. I mean, like I said, we're exposed to so much in this world, and a lot of we can't stop because we're in the world. We work, we see things. But what we do have control over is the things that we willingly expose ourselves to. That's a huge issue. Like, I know that if I walk out my door, I don't know what I'm going to see. I'm driving down the road, I don't know what I'm going to see. It just happens. But I can open up my phone and I can choose to go to this certain website, or I can choose to open this certain app. I can choose to look at this on the internet. I do that. It's not anybody else. You got to remember that you're the only one that allows the things in your life. No one's going to do it for you. No one's going to say, don't do that. I mean, if somebody says, don't do something, that doesn't mean that you're going to have to do it. But you're going to have to make the decision on what you're going to allow in your life and what you're going to be exposed in yourself to. Think about it with children. Again, we have that understanding. Most parents want to allow their children to view or listen to certain things because they understand that power of influence. Why don't we internalize that for ourselves? Think about what you're being exposed to. I'm thinking about what I'm being exposing myself to. We have to always have to examine ourselves and make sure and see where we are, just to make sure that we're not going down that road and understanding that power of influence.
A lot of people, I think it's where they put value. A lot of people think social media is where I need to be because that's where the latest information is, or whatever the case may be. And I don't think they understand that when it's of this world, it doesn't carry any weight and value very long. When we look at things of the world, 2 Peter chapter 3, when Peter's writing about the Lord's return, he says in verse 10, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth also and the works therein shall be burned up. And he makes this point from that. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness? So that I open up that phone or the television, and whatever it is you're watching, whatever it is you're looking at, maybe it's back to your burger commercial. And by the way, bro, those burgers never look the way they do on TV.
True, true that, true that. They don't. But in the moment, they look real good,
But so
don't
you
they?
think. You're thinking, I really don't have the money for this. This isn't in the budget, but man, my mouth is watering and da da da. And you don't think, how long is the satisfaction of this burger going to last? How far is that going to go? Is it temporary pleasure? Is it lasting pleasure? You know, why Moses chose to depart from Egypt. He considered that the pleasures of sin were just for a season. Hebrews 11, 24 through 26, you know, choosing suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. It's all mental. It's you versus you. It's I need to make up my mind before I open that phone, before I turn on that television. I need to understand that I need to evaluate everything based on where it really stands in the reality of life and the life that is to come. Because whatever it is that looks good is just appealing to my senses. It's appealing to the carnal.
Very, very temporary. Very temporary. I think about things that I even enjoy. You know, I enjoy playing basketball. I enjoy being active. But then I'm thinking about how all these things, like, I get a temporary enjoyment of what I'm doing. And then it's like, okay, well, it's done. It lasted for, you know, however long I play or whatever. And like, okay, well, what now? You know, it's very temporary. Even the stuff you enjoy that's not sinful, like whatever hobby that you have, it's temporary. And that's the whole, most things in this life is temporary. If we don't grasp that, and we get caught up into the world and what it has going on and fall into these pitfalls, you know, we're in a world of trouble, man. Like you said, this the mindset behind all of it. If you go into the mindset of like, okay, cool, yes, I can enjoy certain things, but with the mindset of it's temporary, so it's kind of is what it is, like then you can still enjoy it, but at the same time, you understand, like a trip or a vacation or whatnot, someone has been planning for a vacation, you know, you can still do it. But, you know, after that week or 2 weeks or however long you go, you got to come back to reality. You're coming back to your life because that's not, it's just temporary. So you enjoy yourself for however long. And same with sin. Like you're not denying that it's pleasurable because we say it's pleasurable. Like Moses, Hebrews 11, 24 and 25, I believe it is. The pleasures of sin for a season. Like you enjoy that pleasure for however long. And then now what? Now you have to deal with the consequences of your decisions. Now you have to deal with losing your family, first of all, losing your soul, but, you know, all the other things that come with that decision that you've made, you know, whatever that decision made, I mean, was it worth it? That's all I ask. Like, was it worth it? Like that song that we sing, have you counted the cost? If your soul should be lost. We talked about counting the cost in Luke 14, 25 through 33 earlier, but like, have you counted the cost about the decisions that you're going to make?
Yeah, so I need to convince me that all the things that the world presents to me are temporary, whatever it is in this world, even the best constructed, whatever, it's just going to be temporary. And then I need to think, hey, the Lord's told me this. So I need to not just have the information, but I need to be fully convinced and thoroughly invested. You know, 1 John 2, 15 through 17, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, love the Father's not in. For all that's in the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. So everything that looks good is going to be gone. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So whatever it is, think about lust, that thing that I'm longing for and not all lust is wrong and it's not all sexual. It's the hamburger. You know, whatever it is, all these things that you stack up there on that priority list, it is so temporary, even if it's going to last your whole physical lifetime. What do you think 10,000 years from now in eternity, you're going to be wherever you are in heaven or in hell? You're going to be thinking back 10,000 years from now about that car that you bought. And by the way, bro, it's 2024. They got 2025s out now. New body style or new this, right? Yeah. So the person who says, oh, this is going to be my car, this is going to, that person that's driven like that, because not one, again, like you said, there's a balance. Right. Sometimes you need a new car. Sometimes you need a new place to live. But that person that's driven by this is the hottest, this is the latest, this is the greatest, just wait. The next latest, greatest, hottest is coming around the corner. Every year, iPhones drop. You know, every year, watches and tablets and whatever else. And they just tweak something, make something so that it's a better camera or whatever it is. And man, people lose their minds. It's like they're devoted to that. And it's like, set your mind that you're chasing the temporary all the time. Why not chase the eternal? Why not put some of that effort towards the investment that's really going to last?
Effort. You control that. You control that mindset. You control what you're gonna do. It's up to you. It's literally you versus you. You have to make these decisions. I have to make these decisions. What we're gonna do in this life, regardless of what we're exposed to and what we're influenced by, we have to make that decision. And when you make that decision, stick with it. It's not a going back and forth, not hot and cold. Again, like we said earlier, you're either saint or you're a sinner, a child of the God, child of God, or a child of the devil. There's no middle ground. There's no lukewarm. You got to make that determination. You got to make that decision and stick with it. No wavering. I'm not going to do this for 2 weeks or 2 months, and then I'm going to go back. No, I've decided. Make that decision. Stick with it.
You've brought up Jesus being our example. I like to think about it this way. He's already been where I want to be. So I can look at him. We look at reviews, and if somebody's going on a trip somewhere, oh, would you like, where'd you stay? All these types of things. We want to know from people's experiences. Well, Jesus has already been in heaven, and his mindset on earth wasn't, let me pursue all the enjoyment I can get here. In John 6, 38, I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him that sent me. That's huge for me. He's been there. He gets to compare how great there is versus how great here is. And you can kind of look forward and use Jesus as a time machine and see how he viewed the world in contrast to back being back in eternity in heaven with the Father. He wants to get back, so much that when he was suffering, and talk about mental preparation, he's in the garden. He knows, we might know bad things are around the corner from us, but we don't have the full information like Jesus, who knows everything that's about to happen to him. And he said, Luke 22, 42, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. And then he says, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. He's not excited to go through what he's about to go through. He doesn't necessarily want to, but his mindset is, your will, not mine. That is how we ought to equip ourselves. Instead of allowing myself to defeat myself, I need to equip myself to make myself win. I need to understand that, hey, not my will, but his will be done. I need to think through the things that I'm doing in life and say, does this line up with my Father's will? He knows better. Does it line up with my Savior's example? He knows better.
Is that again? We can't say this enough, but that mental preparation and just making sure, again, like I talked about earlier, like that discipline that it's going to take to get a routine of something and doing something, even when you may not feel like doing it, that's going to trend that can translate over into the spiritual realm as far as your mental capability and your mental toughness and your mental stick-to-itiveness, if you will. But that can contribute to that, because if you can do something, that will make it a little easier once you actually face something in this life that is a difficult decision. Your mind has already been made. You exercise that mental preparation. You've exercised. I think it was what Hebrews 5:14 through 16 about having their senses exercised, where they weren't growing, but they needed to have their senses exercised. But you've exercised this so you know when you have to make a decision, then your mind is right there already. It's not the first time that you've had to go through something. You've already mentally been preparing. It's like a fighter or someone that's preparing for, excuse me, any type of sport. They prepare so that whenever the fight is, if the fight is in December, that boxer is training from however long out, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days out. He's training for that time, getting prepared for this. What 45 minute fight or however long it may be, but you've been training for all this time. So the first time you get hit is not in the fight. That's not the first time you've been hit. You've been beat up the whole time and you've been preparing yourself. Same with us mentally. We have to prepare ourselves before we actually get hit and make sure that we have the right response to that that blow, whatever that blow may be.
Bro, you brought up earlier Romans 13, you read 13 and 14, to make yes. not provision for the flesh. Here's an illustration I think a lot of people can probably relate to is dieting. So you say, I want to go on a diet. I want to lose X amount of pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you've made that decision and you've made the proper mental preparation, your grocery list changes.
Right.
Your meal preparation changes. But then you're at the grocery store and you're walking through the aisle and you're like, ooh, them Oreo cookies, or let's give a shout out to our sister Sheila, you know, the Chips Ahoy. and it's like, ooh, I'm on a diet, but you know what? These found their way into the cart. They didn't find their way into the cart.
They didn't magically put it in there.
And you know what? It wasn't the grocery store. That wasn't the point of failure. The point of failure was you weren't fully mentally devoted to it. And now you've got something in your cupboard that's going to be temptation. So whatever it is in life, if you're the person that's tempted by this, or this, you need to remove those things until you have the mental strength to overcome them, if you ever do. Right. You brought up the phones and TV and whatever else it is. Man, if I'm giving in to wanting to buy whatever I see on TV, I need to stop watching commercials. Stop. You know, I need to get off of whatever this is that's there. Which kind of leads me to this point. What about the repentance process? I mean, obviously diets and pleasing God aren't the same subject, but what if somebody hasn't made that proper mental preparation, their actions aren't lining up? Well, look, it's not time to say I've lost.
Right.
Now it's time to hit that reset button, right? Proverbs 28:13, he that covers sin shall not prosper, but whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy. If I can change, God will forgive me. It's not time to give up. This lesson isn't saying, hey, if you're mentally weak, you're lost and you have no hope. It's time to get in the spiritual gym and perfect that which is lacking, and then turn your attention to God. And if you're not a Christian, it's time to repent and be converted, Acts 3:19, and then get into the gym of spiritual preparation and get ready. Yeah.
Great points, man. Great points. Exercise ourselves mentally to be ready spiritually. It's a fight. Every day, it's a fight.
Don't set yourself up. Don't set yourself up to lose.
No. Mm-mm. No. You got to keep pushing. Bro, I'm just going to put this application out there, just like you said, like we're talking about dieting. How many times are you just dead tired and you don't want to go out there and lift weights or work out in general? How many times is that every day, you know, multiple times a week, you know what I mean? But what happens? You actually get out there and do it, regardless of if you feel like it or not. That's not a test of just physical strength. That's preparing mentally as well. Like, the carnal can impact the spiritual. Can you push yourself? Can you push yourself past, oh, I don't feel like it? Yeah, I can. It's so, how easy is it to sit on the couch and, you know, watch the TV or, you know, not do nothing, be in a recliner? How easy is that? That's too easy, right? Anybody can do that. But the hard part is actually pushing yourself to get out there and doing something, even when you don't feel like doing.
Just do it, right? Just be a doer.
Literally.
Yep.
Doer.
Push through. Well, you got anything else for us, bro?
That's it, man. Just understanding that power of influence, and that is very powerful. Something considered for us all, you know, not just children, but us as adults as well, as Christians.
Yeah, you versus you. And tell you what, folks, you can lose to yourself a whole lot easier than this world's going to influence you. And this world can only influence you so far as you let it. And if these are areas where you don't feel like you can overcome, it's time to remove the temptation. It's time to remove what it is. Well, that's what we got for y'all. Hope that you've enjoyed our discussion and some of these study points. Like always, if ever be helpful, be more than willing if you'd get in touch. So that'll be it for today. Hopefully the world continues to stand. Be back on Tuesday with a podcast. Until then, say goodbye.